As I said, we just had a couple of weeks break with the family. We're really blessed. Every year we get to go to a holiday house on the north coast of Northern Ireland. There's something really regenerative about going to the same place every year. Something quite relaxing, doing the same things, eating a lot of brunch, playing a little bit of golf. And using it as a place and as a time to kind of get ready for another year. We've been talking a little bit about kind of fresh starts. Some of you, this may feel no different the start of September. It may have been a very normal summer, no different. But for others, I know, it'd be quite a significant time of going back into new rhythms and routines. And we try and quite deliberately use that time when we're away on holiday then. I try and read a couple of different books on our way. I'll try and focus on one where I'm looking at maybe a book of the Bible I've not looked at much. And another one a little bit more looking at a topic. And I was looking at two books which I'd kind of had recommended to me or handed to me. And God in his kindness meant they were very, very relevant to today. I was looking at some of the Psalms with Eugene Peterson, all about discipleship in an instant society, what it looks like to follow Jesus as his disciple for a lifetime. And then the book that I recommended was a book by a guy called John Mark Comer called Practicing the Way, again on discipleship. What does it look like to follow Jesus day by day by day, to live life with him? As I said, I think God was very kind as we come to this final section in Mark 8, that when I came to sit down at my desk the last couple of days and prepare, loads of things have been triggering my mind off of going, that's really helpful. So hopefully they'll help and bless you as we look here at the end of Mark 8. Because I don't know about you, but if you've been around church a little bit, you'll have heard the word disciple. You'll have heard phrases, I think we even used just now, I follow Jesus. But I think for me, there's a danger they just become cliche. They're words which sound good, but unless I really stop to think about them, I don't really know what they mean. We're all disciples of something. The question is not if you are a disciple, if you're a follower. The question is, of what or to what are you a disciple? And that is really controversial in kind of the modern Western way of thinking. Because we live in a hyper-individualized world where some of the key mantras of our age, be true to yourself, speak your truth, just be whoever you want to be. And there's others like that which litter social media and coffee shop walls. And our world keeps telling us this story. We're taught through stories, we're formed through stories. And they keep telling us this story that we are what we want to be. And we're in charge of our own destiny, that we form ourselves, that our aim in life is just to be authentically whoever we want to be. Follow our dreams, follow your goals, follow your passions. Wonder how that's going for you. If you're getting to where you want to go, if that's what you're doing. And as we start kind of new terms or new rhythms, it's a really good time to reflect, because we're all being shaped and formed. We're all becoming something. The question is, who or what am I becoming? And that then leads to the fundamental question which Jesus challenges us with here of who or what am I following? Because it's part of our human wiring, the way God has made us, that we're drawn to people. We're drawn to imitate others. We see traits in them. We love spending time with certain people. We want to be like them. It's part of how God has designed us to grow. It's part of what parents have designed to be in part to those who have children. For us as church family, with the children around us, to be people who are worthy of imitation. We can see that for good and evil, can't we? As we read studies around children, how they grow up and the influence their parents had or didn't have on their lives in different ways. And this is then where discipleship comes in. Because if we're not being formed by Jesus, we're being formed by something or someone else. It's going down. And that's why it's been great over the summer to be looking at those three questions. As Helen said, who is Jesus? Who did he come for? And what does he ask? Last week we saw, if you're here, how Peter declared himself to be the Messiah. Not himself, declared Jesus to be the Messiah, the promised Saviour, King. And Jesus then outlines that he's going to suffer, die, and then rise. And it's at this point that he calls the crowd and the disciples to him. And he says this, what we just read. Whoever wants to be my disciple must deny themselves, take up their cross, and follow me. For whoever wants to save their life will lose it, but whoever loses their life for me and for the gospel will save it. There'll be a variety of us in the room today. Today, you may be somebody who's considering, what does it mean to be a follower of Jesus? You want to know what you're signing up for. Or you may be a Christian, but have a deep desire now to take your faith more seriously, maybe. Or maybe you've been following Jesus for decades. And today, maybe it's just going to be a helpful reminder and encouragement at the start of a new term, what it looks like to follow Jesus. But all of us are called here to listen to Jesus' call today. But to understand it, we need to go to this key question. What is a disciple? Jesus says, whoever wants to be my disciple must deny themselves, take up their cross, and follow me. So what is a disciple? I found John Mark Comer's work really helpful here, as he reminded me that in the first century, this was not a new concept. Discipleship wasn't something Jesus invented per se. When he arrived on the scene, when he turned up in a synagogue or a town, as we've seen in the last few months, the category, the box people would have put Jesus in was rabbi or teacher. He's addressed 90 times in the Gospels, and 60 of those times he's addressed as rabbi or teacher. And then all throughout the Gospels, all throughout Mark, he calls people to follow him. Mark 1, 16 to 20, you can flick there if you want. It says, as Jesus walked beside the Sea of Galilee, he saw Simon, his brother Andrew, casting a net into the lake, for they were fishermen. Come, follow me, Jesus said, and I will send you out to fish for people. At once they left their nets and followed him. He continues, when we got a little further, he saw James, son of Zebedee, and his brother John in a boat, preparing their nets. Without delay, Jesus called them. They left their father Zebedee in the boat with the hired men and followed him. Then in Mark 2, once again, Jesus went out beside the lake. A large crowd came to him. He began to teach them. As he walked along, he saw Levi, son of Alphaeus, sitting at the tax collector's booth. Follow me, Jesus told him. Levi got up and followed him. In Mark 3, he appoints the 12. And now Mark 8, he calls the crowds together with the disciples and calls them to follow him. They call them to be disciples. It's a word, disciple, we don't use much today. The word in Greek, mathetes, and according to the dictionary I looked up, I don't speak Greek, it means disciple, student, or follower. And all those words are really good. They're useful words to kind of understand what it means to be a disciple. Follower, it works as a word. We use it quite a bit now, don't we? It's probably been tainted a little bit by social media, that word. I think, hey, I follow Jesus. Did you see his Instagram story the other day? It was incredible. Then it got a little bit weird. Student. Another word used to describe it, but maybe with our kind of Western school system, we just take that to mean kind of imparting knowledge, information transfer. I go to class with Jesus once a week. It's a good word, but it doesn't quite capture it all. I think others have suggested apprentice is a better term today, and I think maybe that works best in our culture. Not sure if any of you have been apprentices. I haven't, but I was looking into it recently for work as we look to bring on an apprentice. And an apprentice is someone who learns under another, who learns to be like them and then go and do what they did. Jesus didn't invent discipleship, as I said. It was the final stage of the Jewish education system. There were three stages in the Jewish education system. Jewish kids started school about 5 years old. At the local Beit Sefer, the house of the book, it was an oral culture, Jewish oral culture. And by about 12 or 13, you get this, most kids would have learned the entire Torah, memorized it. Genesis, Deuteronomy, five books of the Bible, memorized. And at that point, the vast majority of Jewish kids would head home to the family business, run the farm, eventually start a family, probably pretty quickly to start a family at that culture. So most people started there. The best and the brightest would then head to the next level, the Beit Midrash, the house of learning. And by 17, they would have memorized the whole Old Testament. And at that point, most were done. They were basically told to head home. But the best would apply to apprentice under a rabbi, to be a disciple under a rabbi. And this was really hard to get into. If you think about Oxford or Cambridge, like a PhD program at a top university. And you had to find a rabbi whose yoke you were drawn to, that's what they said, and then beg to join his band of students. He would grill you, interview you. If he thought you had what it took, he would then say, follow me, come apprentice under me. And if you were lucky enough to get in, your whole life then had these three driving goals. Firstly, you would be with your rabbi. Jesus invited his followers to be with him, to follow him. We see them leave things to do that. You would leave your family, you leave your trade. I love that little line about James, who just leaves his father in the boat. It's great. Leaves him there with the hired hand. You'd leave your village, you'd follow the rabbi 24/7. The class was life with your rabbi. You'd spend all your time with them. You would eat with them, sleep beside them. You'd listen to their teaching. You'd spend hours walking with them from town to town. The main goal, they used to say, was to be covered in the rabbi's dust as you walked on the dusty roads behind them. Firstly, to be with your rabbi. The second thing then would then to become like your rabbi. That's the heart of apprenticeship, to be with your master with the goal of becoming like them. You would copy him, his tone, his figures of speech, his teaching. You wanted to be him. With your final goal then, to do as your rabbi did. The whole point of apprenticeship was to train under a rabbi to then become one yourself. And if you got through the training of this, and that was a real if, then when they thought you were ready, your rabbi would turn to you and say something like, I give you my blessing. Now go and make disciples likewise. This is what it meant to be a disciple in first century Israel. And it's no different to what it means today in Bicester 2,000 years later. The three driving goals of a disciple: to be with Jesus, to become like Jesus, and to do as Jesus did. There is so much more we can unpack on those which we can't today, but the invitation Jesus gives the crowd and his disciples is the same for us. Will we be apprentices of Jesus? Will we follow him as his disciples? It's a lifelong commitment, but one from both sides. There's a comfort there for those who've been following Jesus for years. Discipleship, apprenticeship is a journey. It's a daily walking with Jesus, listening to him, learning from him. It can be slow progress at times, can't it? But Jesus promises that once you choose to follow him, he will always be your rabbi. And the amazing thing we then see here is that this call here radically was for everyone. You notice there at the start of verse 34, he called the crowd to him along with his disciples and said, whoever wants to be my disciple. Remember just back 2 minutes ago, maybe half some, Jewish system of education, whoever. Could you imagine a fisherman, a tax collector, a Jewish zealot meeting that high bar to become a disciple in Israel? It was unimaginable. In Acts, we get told that the men were ordinary, uneducated people. It was unheard of for them to be apprentices under a rabbi. We've then seen it in Mark when we've looked at these couple of chapters. Religious bigots, those caught in adultery, a blind beggar, a demon-possessed foreigner, all invited to apprentice under him. Whoever. We're all invited to be disciples of Jesus, whoever we are, whatever we have done. Whether you're rich and upwardly mobile, or stuck in the depths of poverty, whether you have 3 degrees and would have made that Jewish standard of education, or you were a school dropout, whether you grew up in a Christian home, or Jesus was a swear word growing up, or you're a virgin or someone who's been sexually promiscuous, you're married or divorced, someone full of faith, someone racked by doubt, whoever means whoever. So if you're sitting there today, you've been looking in on these questions of who Jesus is, and you go, it just couldn't be me. I'm not worthy enough to be a disciple, to be an apprentice of this man. Whoever means whoever. Jesus has shown that, and he continues to show that. The church is not meant to be for only a certain respectable person in society. It's not meant to only be a certain class or someone with a certain level of education. Whoever means whoever. Whoever can mean you. But we need to also then hear the warning of history here. He calls the crowd and his disciples. And throughout the gospel, we see the writers show there are the disciples, those who follow Jesus, not just the 12, there are a number of disciples, and there were crowds. Jesus had loads of people who saw what he did, who listened to his words, who saw miracles unimaginable to us, and yet did not follow him. Think back to the chapters we've been in. Over 5,000 fed at one point. 4,000 in another, just a few verses earlier than this. And yet the vast majority did not choose to follow him. Why? Well, because his call to apprentice under him is a hard call. Philosopher, the author, Dallas Willard, has said it's the greatest issue facing the world today. The greatest issue facing the world today, with all its heartbreaking needs, is whether those who are identified as Christians will become disciples, students, apprentices, practitioners of Jesus Christ. Steadily, I love that word steadily, recognizes it's a journey, it's growth, it takes time. Steadily learning from him how to live the life of the kingdom of heavens into every corner of human existence. As we're about to unpack in these verses, Jesus is not just looking for converts, for people to tick Christian on a census. He's looking for apprentices. It's a hard call, but is it worth it? Well, let's unpack briefly what Jesus says about what it means to be a disciple, what it means to be an apprentice of his. He says this: whoever wants to be my disciple must deny themselves, take up their cross and follow me. For whoever wants to save their life will lose it. But whoever loses their life for me and for the gospel will save it. First thing to notice is that to be an apprentice is an intentional decision. It's an intentional decision. Andrew and Peter left their nets, left their livelihoods. Levi did the same. And they began to follow him. It's an intentional step. It's saying yes to Jesus and saying no to following other things, to following other philosophies, other people. And it continues to be intentional for those of us who are Christians. Whilst disciple, it's a noun, it's not a verb, it's something you are if you decide to follow Jesus. Becoming more like him is an intentional day-by-day decision. There are no accidental saints. Nobody just wakes up at 50 and thinks, wow, look at that. Weird. I've become a bit more like Jesus. Seems like I've just been living out the Sermon on the Mount. I'm increasingly free of worry and care and gossip and lust and anger. I'm less dominated by fear and the need to please others. I feel free, more full of love. I love my enemies. What a nice coincidence that is. We will all be formed, either by the world or by Christ. And if it's to be by Christ, that means following him. It's intentional following him day by day, listening to his words. Spending time with him, spending time with his people as we're doing now, becoming more like him as we do. So maybe today is a good time this week for those of you who have been walking with Jesus for many years, doing that by grace, by his spirit working in you, to reflect, how's that going? How am I following Jesus? It's an intentional decision. It's a sacrifice. As I said, saying Jesus is our rabbi, saying that we are not our own rabbis, not our own best guides to how to live life. It denies we're the center of the universe. It means we no longer rely on ourselves, that we stop trying to find joy and satisfaction and hope in what we do or what we have. Which is really good, because if you're anything like me, you know you're not very reliable. And you know things aren't reliable either. The call to take up your cross means there is sacrifice in this life. We must die to some things and release them in order to follow Jesus. As we saw, the disciples give up things. Initially, their jobs, their status, their families. I'm sure they gave up income, friendships, comfort to follow Jesus. Eventually, all the disciples died for following Jesus. So the promise for an apprentice to Jesus is not a life of comfort. If we live against the world, if we go against its formation, if we go against its discipleship of us, it will be tough. One of the things Jesus pulls out is our love of stuff. What good is it for someone to gain the whole world, yet forfeit their soul? What can anyone give in exchange for their soul? Jesus is saying here, you could have it all. You could own everything. Every company. Every item you'd ever want. All the power, all the status, all the authority. You could call the shots on it all. And then die and instantly realize it was suicide. You get a bunch of useless treasure when you could have had eternal, glorious, life-giving, joy-filled life for eternity. Your soul living for eternity in joyous union with the one who made you. This verse is meant to provoke us, but it's also meant to give us a sense of freedom. We don't need to have it all. We don't need to be the most successful person in the world. We don't need to be the most successful person in this building, even in our job. We don't need to have all the things every advert tells us we need. Jesus' life is a demonstration of this. Just a few verses earlier, he spoke of how he'd be rejected and suffer because of how he lived. Taking up our cross is a sacrifice. We will clash with our friends and family who think differently to us. People may think then that we're being judgmental about their life choices or who they're following based on how we live. We'll feel out of step with the world. We'll feel different. Aliens, strangers, foreigners, all the language the Bible uses. And whilst in many countries, including one of our mission partners in India, I was chatting to Das the other day. Remember when we met Das, who runs a seminary in India? What did he train up? Do or die missionaries. I think their life expectancy is under a year. The men and women they're training up to go into the hardest places of the world to share the gospel. Take up the cross for them is very literal. For us at the moment in the West, in God's wisdom, in his sovereignty, it's more of a metaphor than a reality. But it is putting to death our own desires, our own comforts, longing to live how we want to live. It is a form of surrender. Surrendering and taking seriously Jesus and his words. Looking at his way of life, looking at his rule of life, looking at how a rabbi lived. Jesus says if we love him, if we're to follow him, we will keep his commandments. The rabbi assumes we will obey him. This is discipleship. It will mean a realigning of the priorities. I've been reflecting on the last few weeks. I try and take time to reflect. It will mean saying no to some things. Say yes to other things. And it will take effort. It's not easy to swim against the tide of the world. The world which tells us it's all about success. It's all about ambition and wealth and possessions. It's hard work. Jesus didn't have an issue with hard work. He didn't have an issue with effort as if that was anti-grace. Grace is not opposed to intentional effort. Grace is opposed to earning, thinking we can earn our way into relationship with God. This way, this Christian life is for anyone, for whoever. It is free. It is unearned. It's by grace alone, by faith alone. But the way we continue now by his Spirit involves intentional surrender and sacrifice. And in its most basic sense, it will just mean unpacking those three things, what it means to be a disciple. It will mean spending time with Jesus, our rabbi, learning to be with him, to delight in him, to speak to him, to bring to him all of our lives. And that will mean we need to say no to other things which eat our time. Some things which are probably quite good. And other things like the 3 or 4 hours we all spend on our phone, which are a bit of a waste of our time. It'll mean decluttering our lives. Spending time with him will mean becoming like him. Listening to what he says about how to live in this world. Listening to his teaching and then putting it into practice. I love that phrase, putting it into practice. We're not going to get it right all the time. We're not going to get it right first time, second time, third time, 10th time. It will mean changing how we live in certain areas and being willing to be challenged on that as we live life together. And then it will mean going and making disciples. Not our own disciples, not people to be followers of us, but people to be disciples of Jesus. And that all takes surrender and sacrifice. It takes planning, it takes intentionality. To be an apprentice also means we'll not be ashamed of our rabbi. You can't ignore Jesus' words and be a follower of him. I can't say I'm a loving husband if I stick my noise-cancelling headphones in whenever Caroline starts to speak. Jesus says, if anyone is ashamed of me and my words in this adulterous and sinful generation, the Son of Man will be ashamed of them when he comes in his Father's glory with the holy angels. It's always been the same. Many people like bits of Jesus. Maybe they like the way he healed. They like what he said about love. They like some bits of his teaching. And then we just try and ignore or argue around the bits we don't like, or the bits which just provoke us a little bit. It's not something new, which we're only dealing with in the UK church in 2024, this. Whilst it is something, if any church in the UK are really grappling with this, are we ashamed of Jesus' words? Because if we ignore his words, if we pick and choose, it's like a husband or wife going against their wedding vows. It's spiritual adultery, Jesus says here. Jesus calls himself here the Son of Man. It's a title he gives himself from the Old Testament, was only used in reference to the Son of God, to being God himself. He's saying we can't just say Jesus is a good teacher, a rabbi only. No, he is king and he is Lord. To be an apprentice is to not be ashamed of our rabbi, to recognize him as Lord of all of our lives. Sounds tough, doesn't it? Happy September. Full on. Hard sell. So is it worth it? I work in marketing. It can be a shady industry. I'd like to hope I'm not that shady in my marketing for a Christian theological college, but you never know. Full of clickbait, false advertising. It tries to lure you in with false promises. It keeps you hooked. Here's some of my favourites. There's McDonald's. Shows you burgers completely unlike the real thing. Here's some skin cream. Less wrinkles in only minutes. Well, here's one my family really needs to listen to. Nutella claiming it's a nutritious breakfast choice. As if you read the actual lines there, it is absolutely genius what it's trying to claim, that it's healthy, which I'm sticking to. But advertising can be a shady business. It overpromises, it underdelivers. It's fair to say Jesus doesn't do this. He's clear about what discipleship with him looks like. He outlines the cost benefit, and there's probably more on the cost than there is on the benefit initially, it seems. It says this, as I've highlighted there, for whoever wants to save their life will lose it. But whoever loses their life for me and for the gospel will save it. There are countless quotes, I've not got time for them, of stories of people who have seemingly made it, who have gained the whole world, and yet at the top of it, I've gone, I don't actually have anything. Jesus is realistic. This life is hard. This road is narrow. Self-denial is not easy. But we need to weigh out the benefits, because the question is less to be, how much am I willing to surrender to Jesus? The better question is, how joyful, peaceful, and free do I really want to be? Because the promise is life with Jesus forever. He is our reward. Just as a seed needs to die in order to flourish and flower, so will we if we surrender it all to him. The Christian life, the spiritual life, is not easy. But what can often be missing as we weigh it up, and maybe you are in here today and you're weighing it up, is the diagnosis that life without God is even harder. Living in a godless, meaningless, shepherdless universe is really hard. Not knowing who to follow, not knowing what to listen to, having no rational explanation for the world we live in, having no security in my identity and who I am, looking left, right, and centre to find it, being let down. No, Jesus promises his followers life. to the full now and for eternity, even as we surrender to what we think is life-giving now. Every rabbi had his yoke. It's a Hebrew idiom. It was for his set of teachings, his way of reading scripture, his take on how to thrive as a human being in God's world. How you too could taste a little bit of what they, the rabbi, had tasted. Jesus said this of his yoke. He said, "Come to me, all, whoever, who are weary and burdened, and I will give you rest. Take my yoke upon you and learn from me, for I am gentle and humble in heart, and you will find rest for your souls. For my yoke is easy and my burden is light." This is our rabbi. This is Jesus. He wants us to follow him, to apprentice under him, to find life with him. For Jesus, we see in his own life, the deepest joys came from surrender and self-denial, from sacrifice. Hebrews tells us it was from the joy set before him he endured the cross. And he says to us now, come and leave the safe and small pleasures of this kind of protected life we live. Come and experience the wild delights of following me, following heaven's King. Trust me. Come and apprentice under me, for there is life in all its fullness. It's an incredible invitation he gives us today. So as we come to the start of a new term, hear this invitation from Jesus. Maybe it's to become an apprentice of Jesus for the first time. You might conclude, and you'd be right, that following Jesus will cost a lot. But not following him will cost even more. Maybe, like me, it's been a fresh reminder, a challenge to enjoy the benefits and privileges of being an apprentice, of being a disciple. To delight in spending time with my rabbi, to listen closely to his words. To go and draw others into his orbit. Because it's there, it's with Jesus, that life for now and eternity is truly found. So friends, let's today not turn down this invitation. It's an incredible invitation, whoever means whoever, to come and follow Jesus and be his apprentice. Let me pray, and then we're going to sing. Father, help us all to see that life with you is truly worth it. And may our lives reflect that in how we order them, in how we shape them, in how we delight in the wonderful good gifts you've given us. Lord, help us to find our joy, our satisfaction, our hope in you and doing life with you. Thank you that you walk with us every step of the way in the highs and the lows. You are our rabbi and so much more than that. And for that we give you wonderful praise. Amen.